Hello, my fellow travelers on the Fireside Mystery Theater Train of Terror. Next stop, a bucolic mid-sized mansion, home to the elderly, the infirm, and more than a few hidden secrets. This is our final story, the Twilight episode, as we sunset our collection of Connecticut true crime, Nightfall on the Nutmeg State. The story you're about to hear now, The Confession of Amy Archer Gilligan, was taped live at the Westport Library in Westport, Connecticut, on Friday the 13th of October, 2023. For the last stop on our journey through the horrors of Connecticut, we find ourselves just north of Hartford, in the cozy town of Windsor. The year is 1914, and as we head down Prospect Street, we find ourselves standing in front of a snug, three-story brick house with a picturesque wraparound porch. This is the Archer home for elderly people and chronic invalids. Its selfless proprietor, Amy Archer Gilligan, known locally as Sister Amy, is a well-respected pillar of the community, never seen without a Bible tucked under her arm, such a saintly and splendid woman. Let's head inside now and take a look. It appears we may just be able to catch Sister Amy in action as she tends to one of the home's residents, one who has unexpectedly fallen ill.
I feel like there might be something very, very wrong with me.
Sister Amy.
No, Father David. I did not mean to wake you. I apologize. I thought I might come in and sit with you as these may be your final hours before the good Lord calls you home.
Should we call Dr. King?
No. It's not time to call Dr. King yet. Absolutely not. I did bring you another glass of lemonade to wet your whistle and help with that cough. Go on, good. That's good, Father. Soon you'll be walking in his kingdom and you'll never have to feel pain or sorrow. All the troubles of this world gone.
Help me, Lord!
I hope I've made you comfortable, Father. It has been such a blessing to have you with us. But now, you need to do something for me. I need you to hear my confession. I'm afraid I've made a mistake. Consider this your last act in the service of God. Is that all right? Will you hear my confession? This is a bit of a long story, but I'll try to make it quick. I know you don't have long. I can see the signs. Do you recall the first day your parish brought you to us?
And I want to thank you again for taking Father. After his episode, we just did not know what to do.
Well, I understand you just aren't equipped at the rectory to take care of a man in such a state. And thank you for your generous donation. Of course, it's not what I would charge my typical residents. I do hope you know that. As Jesus said, my Father's house has many rooms, but I only have six. If I could board him for free, I would, but tending to the elderly and infirm does come with a price. Quite a price.
Well, we thank you from the bottom of our hearts. I want you to know that our entire parish chipped in, and we've set up a special box for additional tithes that people can donate to every Sunday. He tended to our flock for almost 60 years. We want him to be as comfortable as possible.
Of course you do. Thank you, sister. I will appreciate anything you send. So this is the common room. It's where our residents can read or relax. Some of them paint with watercolors or play the piano.
Oh, hello, Sister Amy. I was just coming in from the garden. The sunflowers are looking very nice. Yellow, very happy. Yes, they are.
And this is our caretaker, Franklin Andrews. Mr. Andrews, this is Sister Mary and Father David. He'll be staying with us for a while.
Oh, she must be a real sister. Nice to meet you, sister. Sister Amy isn't a real nun. Been married 2 times. Yes, she has. She's a splendid woman. And I know sisters don't get married because they're brides to Jesus Christ.
Now I have to say this because this is confession, and you need to be entirely truthful when you confess. I hated Andrews. He was a big, simple-minded oaf who came to stay with us when he realized he'd become a burden on his sister Nellie. He was never actually hired as a caretaker. I'd never hire someone like him, but I needed to give him a sense of purpose so that he would leave me alone. Can't exactly tell you what put me off about Andrews, but my hatred for the man was so deep, so intense, that at times it almost felt like love. I came to look forward to seeing him tromping around my yard, tending to his garden. The hatred would well up in me, hot like magma in a volcano, roiling, but never erupting. I was quite proud of how composed I was in his presence. Anyway, that was the day you met Andrews and Mr. Smith.
Sister Amy's husbands are both dead.
Thank you, Mr. Andrews. A wonderful reminder. Sister Mary, allow me to show you Father's room.
Good morning, Sister Amy. I didn't know we were receiving another guest today.
Yes, Mr. Smith. Why don't you get acquainted while I finish showing Sister Mary the grounds? I'll be right back with some fresh, ice-cold lemonade.
Oh, that sounds lovely.
It's for residents only. Right this way, Mr. Andrews will watch over Father.
Hello, Smitty. This is Father David. He doesn't talk because he had an episode while he was giving communion. That's why his face is like this. I'm not supposed to talk about how his face looks, but I don't even think it looks that bad. It just looks like he's happy on one side and frowny on the other.
I suppose it does. Hello, Father David. I'm Charles Smith, but my friends call me Smitty.
Smitty moved here after Mr. Baldwin died. He's really good at gin rummy.
Have you seen Mrs. Lonsbury? I thought I saw Dr. King here on Friday morning.
Oh, yes, I did. Mrs. Lonsbury died and Dr. King took her away. That's why Father David came to stay with us. I hope that's okay that I said that. Sister Amy says I'm not supposed to talk about when people die and then new people come and sleep in their beds.
Well, dying is a part of life. I'm sure Father knows that.
And here you men are. Some nice, ice-cold, freshly squeezed lemonade.
It's for residents only.
Well, perhaps you can have half a glass just this once, Mr. Andrews. Here you are, Mr. Smith, and for you, Father.
Thank you.
Oh, well, how wonderful. Those are the first words he said in almost 3 weeks. I can already see him improving.
I believe Father will find peace here. We will take excellent care of him.
Yes, we will. Sister Amy isn't a real sister, but she is devoted to doing good. Yes, she is.
That idiot did occasionally speak the truth. Father, I am devoted to doing good. It is all I live for. But there are times. There are times when... Oh, more lemonade, Father. There you go. Oh, I'll get a warm rag, clean you right up. See, I am a born caretaker. There. Won't be long now. Feels so good to do good, doesn't it? I sometimes worry that there's something wrong with me, because when I do good, it feels very good. Very, very good. Is that all right, Father? I should be able to exult in my good deeds, shouldn't I? Is it okay for me to feel this good? I don't want to tell you what I did, but I have to. I need you to absolve me and make me clean again. Do you remember that day in the garden? I was having a private conversation with Dr. King.
Y-
Yes, I believe the cause of death was severe indigestion.
Such a shame. He seemed to be doing just fine. He was so grateful for my kind and tender care that he had recently rewritten me into his will.
What a kind man. Have you told the family?
Not yet. I'll send word this afternoon.
Oh, is Muggy out today? Do you think I might get a glass of that lemonade I saw in the common room?
It's for residents only.
Hello, Mr. Andrew.
Hello, Dr. King. I'm going to bring Smitty these flowers for his room. He's been too sick for cards lately, and I think the yellow will make him happy. Yellow is my happiest color. Yes, it is.
I don't think colors can be happy or sad, Mr. Andrews, but I'm afraid to say that Mr. Smith passed away last night.
Good night, sweet prince. May flights of angels sing thee to thy rest. Amen.
Okay, amen, but Smitty just got here. He wasn't sick at all. He was walking in the garden with me. He was going to teach me a magic trick.
Well, these things happen with the elderly. One day they're up and about, and the next day they are in sharp decline.
The Lord works in mysterious ways.
Yes, he does. I suppose he does. Well, I will miss Smitty. It doesn't make any sense. When I first came here, people died once or twice a year, but now they're coming and going one after another. It seems very sad. I've been writing to my sister about it.
What? And why would you do that?
Nellie is the smartest person I know, and I asked her why people were dying so much, and she said she didn't know and that I could come home if I wanted to, but I don't want to be a burden on Nellie. No, I don't. She is concerned, though. She's concerned, and she said she will talk to all the families of the residents and see if she can figure it out.
I have no doubt.
I'm sure she will solve the mystery of why old people, at the end of their lives, die.
I bet she will. Nellie is the smart one.
Why don't you take your mind off Mr. Smith and take a nice walk into town? There's a shopping list on the kitchen table. Do not forget the arsenic.
But I just bought some last week.
And yet we still have rats.
Yes, ma'am.
And Andrews, go ahead and have a glass of lemonade.
I thought that...
It is for residents only. But you have earned it. From now on, you have as much lemonade as you like.
Yes, ma'am!
I don't know about you, but I'm in the mood for a nice ice-cold glass of freshly squeezed lemonade. Such a wholesome beverage, not a dark intent in sight. Or is there? Find out after a few words from our sponsors. Now, back to The Confession of Amy Archer Gilligan.
Father? Father, are you still with me? Oh, there you are. Stay with me just a little longer. We are almost there. So I had told Andrews in no uncertain terms not to bother his sister with letters about my business affairs. I had given him multiple warnings that people outside of our residence did not need to know about the personal family business and private deaths of their loved ones. You can see how he was being very disrespectful and spreading rumors. Families that bring their most beloved patriarchs and matriarchs to stay with me do not want their familial tragedies blasted off in letters to God knows who and God knows where. Andrews put the work I'm doing here at risk. So, for the greater good, I did what I had to do. Father, you have to believe me that it was an absolute last resort. And of course, then my worst nightmare came true. I do not know if it was God smiting me or Lucifer testing me, but when Nellie Pierce darkened my doorstep, I knew I was being punished. Mrs. Pierce, I am so sorry for your loss.
Murderer. Franklin was in the prime of his life. He wrote to me every week.
He told me he was gardening and taking a 4-mile walk to town every other
Please
day.
Please come in. I know the death of Mr. Andrews was very sudden, and it must be quite distressing.
Your doctor, if he is a real doctor, said gastric ulcers? I demand to see his body.
Unfortunately, he was already sent to the burial plot specified in his will.
Yes, his will. And how did you get a copy of that? Why would he change it so suddenly? My brother did not have much, and he told me he'd just given you another loan. What do you need another loan for?
Proper care for the elderly comes with a price.
Oh, is that what you're doing? Caring for the elderly?
What else could I possibly be doing?
Don't play the saint with me, sister. My brother was an idiot. I'll give you that. But even he could tell that you are murdering people in plain sight.
How dare you? I am doing the Lord's work, and your brother was delusional. He was sad about losing his friend, and he created this fantasy that I am responsible for the deaths of people already dying.
Not Franklin. He wasn't dying. And you aren't running a residence for the elderly and infirm. You are running some kind of murder factory.
I am not. You look flushed. May I offer you a glass of lemonade?
You may not. I am going to the police and the press, and I won't sleep until I prove that you killed my brother. I am going to rip that sweet old lady mask right off your face and show everyone exactly what you are. A cold-blooded killer!
And of course she's not wrong. In the broad sense, Nellie Pierce is the smart one indeed. But she doesn't understand, and no one will believe her. I must leave her up to God. I know what I am doing is not a sin. You see, Father, when I was a child, I had a dog with beautiful yellow fur, Goldie. She was my love, my constant companion. Until one day she went away, just disappeared. I thought maybe a coyote had got her or she'd drowned in the stream, but then months later I heard crying sounds coming from inside the barn, and there she was. She'd been running with strays and had given birth to 6 tiny little puppies, with the 7th on the way. But something was wrong. She was whining and bleeding, and I could see the pain in her eyes. The light was getting weaker and weaker, like your eyes are now, Father. And I knew that she was asking, begging for me to send her home to God. It was a mercy, and I wept. But I also felt good. I felt clean and righteous. I had found my purpose. An angel on earth meant to ferry dying souls to the kingdom of God. I felt the light of the Lord radiate through me. So when I did the same to her litter of puppies, I thought I would keep feeling that beautiful light. I was surprised when I didn't. It felt good, but not righteous. I felt off. It was exactly the same feeling I felt when I poisoned my husband's. I told myself that it was necessary in order to continue my good work. The insurance money from Mr. Gilligan allowed for a renovation crucial to keeping my doors open. But if I am being completely honest, he drank too much and was too rough with me, and I wanted him to die. Mr. Archer was much sweeter in temperament. But I also desperately desired a soaking tub in my private bath. So you see, I was sending them to God for selfish reasons. I know that helping Goldie pass on was clearly the Lord working through me. And when it's right, it is such an honor to do his will, to send a member of his flock home. Father, you are almost there. And I am finally ready to give my full confession. I did murder Franklin Andrews, not because I hated him, which I absolutely fully did,
but because he was compromising my good work. But I see now that it was selfish. It was a sin. I was being prideful and protective of my mission. He did not deserve to die. And I am sorry. Oh, Father, thank you. I feel so much better now. I am renewed. How could there be anything wrong with allowing the Lord to work through me? Oh, there you go. Don't fight it. Don't fight it. Just let go. Oh, bless you, Father. Good night, sweet prince. May flights of angels sing thee to thy rest. Amen. Oh, it feels so good to do good. So very good.
Perhaps a little too good. Carl Gosley here, local writer for the Hartford Courant. Despite the credible evidence delivered by Nellie Pierce to every authority and publication available, her accusations regarding her brother's death fell on deaf ears. So while I wasn't the first to suspect foul play, I was the first man to suspect that something wasn't quite right at the Archer home. You see, I wrote for the obituary section, and I couldn't help but notice that I was writing an alarming number of death notices for Sister Amy's residence. That evidence, bolstered by Nellie's testimony, not to mention the ludicrous quantities of arsenic Amy was purchasing, eventually led to a formal investigation. In 1917, Amy was convicted of the murder of Franklin Andrews and sentenced to death by hanging. She appealed, pled insanity, and lived out the rest of her days in the Connecticut Hospital for the Insane in Middletown. She passed away in 1962, at the ripe old age of 88, older than most of the approximately 40 people she is suspected of sending home to God.
And now please welcome a fine songwriter who originally hails from this hallowed town of Westport, Mr. Tom Shaner.
Dressed like Emily Dickinson, but her hair was blonde, her eyes were blue. She said, "This world is thick with sin, and what's a woman like me to do?" Sundays on her front stoop, she'd offer you homemade miso soup. She said she lives with few regrets. She'll pass around a bowl of tempeh croquettes. People said she moved away, but her bike is still outside her place. In the alley, I see her cat. I think there's more to the story than that. Ooh. Ooh. don't like much fuss. She has a little bit of poison, but she takes no joy in turning purveyors into prey. Fast Henry the Butcher, he's gone, yes he's gone. He's hanging in his meat locker, he's gone, yes he's gone. She slipped a little poison into his tea as he turned around to slice some salami last Tuesday. Vanessa the vegan murderess, she's the kind of gal you can trust, though you may not agree with her philosophy. She feels she has integrity. Mabel the old fishmonger, she's gone, yes she's gone. She was strong, the poison was stronger. She's gone, yes she's gone. Floating in the sea, there's her baseball cap. They found her remains in a lobster trap. That's that. How would I know?
How would you know?
You say, how would I know?
How would you know?
They call me Wild-Eyed Cannibal Joe.
That was Tom Shaner and his gloriously ghastly song, Vanessa the Vegan Murderess. One more thing before we part. Typically, this final part of our broadcast belongs to our resident poet and philosopher, the esteemed Dr. David Linton. He could not join us this evening, so I'd like to share with you one of our very favorite poems in his canon, one that strikes right at the center of what it is we do here at Fireside Mystery Theater and why we do it. It's called Late Night Radio. You're wide awake, you're out of shape. No matter how they jump, you just can't sleep. They say to count them as they leap the fence, but you have learned that makes no sense. So up you go to get a drink. Into the couch, you slowly sink. Nearby, there sits a radio. You flip the switch and make it glow. Your fingers grasp the tuning knob. To find distraction, that's your job. The needle slides along the dial. When the static clears, you stop a while. There is a voice, perhaps a song, that makes you pause, though not for long. But then here's one to tease your ear. It seems to say, this you must hear. Two people locked in deep contention, their voices filled with angry tension. They snap and growl with building rage, like classic actors on a stage. A woman shouts,
how dare you mock me?
A man responds,
don't try to block me. I'm leaving now. I've had enough. I'll pack my bags and take my stuff.
Oh, no you don't. You've had your fun. Now sit right there until I'm done. There's more I've got to say to you. You'll have to wait until I'm through.
Oh, yeah? Just try to make me stay. You think you always get your way?
Then there was silence from the speaker before the voice became much weaker.
What are you doing? What have you got? Don't aim that at me. It could go off.
It could.
She laughed, then cocked the trigger.
I guess that now I look much bigger. You say you've had enough of talking? That it's time for you to just start walking? Well, not quite yet. Here's what I say. There's an easy way to make you stay.
The radio speaker emits a blast. An organ chord makes it seem to last. The sound fades out for a moment or two, and then a new voice speaks to you. An announcer asks,
"Do you think he's dead? Do you want to know what lies ahead? Let's take a pause before we answer and hear a few words from our sponsor."
Now you're hooked. Sleep has to wait until you find out how these two meet their fate.
And that was The Confession of Amy Archer Gilligan. The cast featured in this episode include Casey LaForest as Amy Archer Gilligan, James Reeser as Father David, Eric Davy Gislason as Franklin Andrews, Alan LaForest as Charles Smith, Michael Pate as Dr. King, Mary Murphy as Nellie Pierce, James Kleinman as Carlin Gosley, and the part of Sister Mary was played by me, Ali Silva. The song Vanessa the Vegan Murderess was written and performed by Tom Shaner, accompanied by Nico Slater. The Confession of Amy Archer Gilligan was written by Liz Leiser with Casey LaForest. And the poem Late Night Radio was written by our resident poet, Dr. David Linton, and performed with love by our company. Our live show and podcast are produced by Gustavo Rodriguez and me for Fireside Mystery Productions. The live performance of Nightfall on the Nutmeg State was supported by Verso Studios at the Westport Library in Westport, Connecticut. Our musical score was performed by Nico Slater. Our lead sound effects designer and engineer was Greg Russ. Additional sound design by Ricardo Delgado and Ali Silva. This series was directed by the team of Liz Leiser, Casey LaForest, and Ali Silva. Our fabulous Fireside production coven includes Liz Leiser, Casey LaForest, and Mary Murphy. Jason Graves composed our theme music, and I manage our audio post-production. Want to support us? Become an FMT Patreon patron today by going to patreon.com/firesidemysterytheater or just follow the link from our website. It's a great way to stoke our fires and hear early releases, Patreon-only content, and enjoy other rewards as you help to keep our fireside flickering. If you fancy, give us a rating and review, and you can follow us on social media at Fireside Mystery. When next you find yourself strangely ill, laid up with inexplicable indigestion, gazing up into the kind, God-fearing eyes of your splendid caretaker, you may want to peer behind the saintly mask into the darkness of their wretched soul and to, well, if it's not already too late, mind the shadows.